Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. I admit I looked at Maggie Gyllenhaal's Wikipedia page, and it does get some things right. She was nominated for an Academy Award for her work in Crazy Heart. She did get a Golden Globe Award for her performance in the British TV show The Honorable Woman. Maggie Gyllenhaal has worked in big-budget films like The Dark Knight and Nanny McPhee, but still finds time for off-Broadway plays. She did graduate from Columbia University, and she is married to the actor Peter Sarsgaard. But she did not appear in a production of Uncle Vanya, directed by Martin Scorsese. Her new movie is The Kindergarten Teacher, and it comes out this Friday from Netflix. I spoke with Gyllenhaal last Friday at the Hamptons International Film Festival live at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor.
You were born in New York and raised in L.A., and what was your childhood like in terms of film, culture, theater? Were you like a big maven and you watched everything, or were you home watching Gilligan's Island like the rest of us?
Well, my parents were from New York. Well, my dad was from Pennsylvania. My mom was from New York, from Brooklyn. And they were kind of new to L.A. You know, they were filmmakers, and they drove across the country with me when I was, I think, 10 months old.
They went out there to make movies.
Yeah, yeah. And so they were lovers of movies. I don't know. I wasn't really allowed to watch, like, Gilligan's Island. To be honest, it's kind of
that's good.
Strange, but I was allowed to watch Sesame Street. My mom actually was one of the people who, she was like a PA on Sesame Street. She was one of the people who started the electric company, so I was allowed to watch those. And The Cosby Show. that was what I was allowed to watch. And a little bit of Little House on the Prairie. And after Little House on the Prairie came on Chips, and I was like, I snuck in a little Chips.
So what was it that drew you to Chips? What did you like about Chips?
I was really, can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
That was like one of the first kind of like, whoa, what is this feeling I'm feeling type of moments.
Wow.
With like
cops, motorcycles,
yeah, like the
freeway.
Jodhpurs, yeah. And just the beginning, just the credits. That was like all I.
That's why I like Gilligan's Island. Remote island, women there, Marianne, Ginger. It was the first time I had some of those feelings you have.
Yeah, but then my parents, it's funny, they loved movies. And every weekend we would go see a movie for a long time, and they took us to a lot of things that I would never have taken my kids to, like really not appropriate.
So your parents are like, they don't want you to watch a certain kind of TV, but they want
totally
you to see
weird.
Don't Look Now, you know what I mean? They want you to go see like really eclectic films and interesting
But it
films.
Was really my husband who was like, oh, you haven't seen this, you haven't seen Cassavetes, you haven't seen this, you haven't seen that, and like really clued me into...
He's a movie nut.
And also to you know, cool 70s movies, but also like really amazing actresses. I feel like he
Such
was...
as?
Well, like, he showed me all the Jenna Rollins movies. He used to tell me, I feel so embarrassing saying this because it was like a sort of a, I think he was just flirting with me, but he used to say he thought I reminded him of Diane Keaton, like only in my wildest dreams. I mean, she's amazing, but he showed me some of her like great movies. And
I went out to dinner with Peter once with another girlfriend of his, and he said the same thing to her. You remind me of Diane Keaton.
It totally works.
Yeah.
It totally works.
It works like a charm.
Young guys out there, yeah, keep that in your pocket.
But he's a movie nut.
Well,
and
he taught me.
You began to really expand.
He really taught me, like, here's some things that you should see. And then still, we were actually joking that someone was telling us we had to see the Watergate documentary, and I was like, yeah, that's like a Peter date night movie. Like, he's like, we have a moment together. He actually, do you know that movie Gomorrah?
Yeah.
It's an amazing movie, but it is brutal. And he's like, we're just about to get married right near here. I heard this movie is great. Let's go see Gomorrah.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. Or White Ribbon, he took me on
he's
like a date
kind of
night.
He's my kind of people. I had people come over
Empire.
For Thanksgiving one year. I go, let's watch Straw Dogs.
Totally. You guys should go
the
out
Thanksgiving.
Together.
So when you grew up in L.A. and your parents are making films and you start acting when you're there, when you're very young.
I mean, not really. It's funny. I think it's in my Wikipedia page, like some of the other very untrue things we were talking
your
about.
Your Wikipedia just now. Page is a mess.
Yeah, totally.
We're going to get to that.
That my debut was in Waterland, you know, which was a movie that my dad made. And in fact, I saw Waterland just the other day because they did a screening of it at Columbia and invited my dad. And so I went up to see it. I am in Waterland for 5 seconds. And my dad had been making the movie in London, and they had maybe 4 weeks in Pittsburgh, and I was in school in L.A., and it was like a way I could go see my dad. It wasn't really my film debut.
Now, when you went to Columbia, what did you go study?
I studied English, literature.
You didn't want to study theater or drama?
I started doing plays there. I did. I did a lot. First, I mean, I had one teacher there who I learned a lot from, this woman, Joan Rosenfels. But I don't know. I guess I was a Columbia, and I sort of felt like I'm a Columbia. Like, I should study what Columbia does best.
Well, not acting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell people that now who are students who go to degree-granting universities for drama. And I say, don't just take drama and acting. Take something where you're going to read a lot of books, philosophy, literature, history. But you're there getting... And what's the first production you do in New York? Do you remember?
Like, my first...
When you got to Columbia, you did plays. What'd you do?
What did I do at Columbia? What was the first one? Oh, I did a student production of No Exit with this guy who became my boyfriend named Dante, who was actually 25 and had already graduated from college.
So, but he was in a student production, Dante.
Yeah, he was sweet.
He'd be in prison now if that happened, correct?
So I did that. I also did The Tempest. And I played Prospero.
Dante in that too?
No. He didn't make it in that one. but yeah, that was the first one. Was No Exit.
And when you graduated with a degree in literature, was acting the goal? Is that what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I did. I always wanted to be an actress. Uh-huh. And I feel like yes. In college, you can read. Although there's so much you're supposed to read, I feel like I never had read all of it. Uh-huh. But I feel like I really learned to write in college. And I don't know about you, but I feel like there's been so many times where I've had, you know, lines I wanted changed or a cut that I wanted shifted or something I had to sort out on a set that I had to write an email or even have a conversation where I had to organize my thoughts before I had it, where I think, thank God I went to college because I was able to say what I meant to say. You know,
well, it helps if you have that background because did you feel there was a progression for you? In the beginning, you were timid and shy, you know, less assertive. And I want to find out, when did that begin to change? Was there a moment you sat there and you said, I need to defend my position and I think I know what's best for me?
I think, you know, I don't know that it was I think basically it was progressive, right? Like, basically, you're right. I was younger and newer, and it was harder for me to say what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten easier as I've had more experience. Mm-hmm. But I also think that different sets give way to a different way of working. So first I'm a jobbing actress and I'm trying to get jobs and I come in for 2 days or one afternoon or whatever and you're like, oh, you want me to do it like that? I don't know. That doesn't sound really very good to me, but I'm afraid to say, let's say. Yeah. Or maybe I do try to say and I get shut down and I accept it and whatever. That's like, you know, it's very hard to do when you're coming in for 1 second. It's like going to a new school where everybody knows each other and you're there for an afternoon. But then, like, when I worked on Secretary, which was really early on, I mean, I was 22, I had a real point of view about what I wanted to say, and Steve Shainberg, who directed it, was really interested in that. Yeah. And I also think he knew that things were happening that I didn't have any idea were happening.
Wasn't all on the page.
And also my 22, I think I'm being very intellectual and I've come from college and I studied feminist theory and everything, you know, and I think I'm saying this. And I think, even he's 20 years older than me, that he was able to see, I know she thinks she's saying this, but this whole other thing is also happening. And he put all that in the film. But so that was a space where I felt I was totally able to.
Collaborative.
Yes. Yeah. And then I went to work on a movie after that, which I won't name, where I was totally shut down. And I was shocked by it.
I always remember, like, you go to a movie, and this is just, you know, my opinion, but, like, you do a film, and you want to be told what to do, basically. My whole thing is, you're making the movie. What movie are you making? How do I fit in? Mm. I do one of the first movies I did. I was lucky. I did this movie, Working Girl, with Mike Nichols. And Nichols says, you're going to have sex. Yeah, he goes, you're going to have sex with this woman, and she catches you having sex. How would you have sex if you're being caught? And I go, well, and I try to think of, like, what's the most comical, you know, thing. And he goes, and he was very gracious. He's like, that's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. But what I think really sells it, if she's just completely naked and you're completely naked and she's just sitting right on top of you, mm-hmm. just riding you. And me and the actor were like, oh. But we had a much more chaste and kind of like silly version of that. And me and the girl were like, and he was like, okay, come now, close off, let's go. But the idea of that clarity, time saving, somebody who comes in and says this.
Yeah, but the thing
prefer
is,
that?
Well, I always use my fantasy movie I would have made with Mike Nichols as like the example of, if Mike Nichols is directing this, yes, I want to be told exactly what to do, please. Like I watch his movies and I'm like, he's directing everybody. He's like pushing everybody further and deeper and funnier and wilder than they ever would go. In fact, the one time I worked with Mike Nichols was on this reading. It's not a movie or even a play that was ever produced. It was just a few day long reading of a play that Alan Alda wrote. Bob Balaban directed the reading, but Mike was sort of producing it, I guess. He came up to me after a day of rehearsal and he just said, she's feral, the character. And I've often thought that was the best direction I've ever gotten, because it doesn't say, like, you know, I don't know, directors ever come up to you and say, like, I'm worried that we're not going to be able to tell that you're mad because you're acting so nice and I'm worried that it's not going to communicate, you know, or I'm afraid that you're going too far in this direction, or I'm afraid that you're, you know, going to confuse people by something that you're doing. I have been told that before. But Mike Nichols is basically going, like, go further, like in any direction you could possibly go. Like what he said to you, you know, go all the way. She's feral. I was playing Marie Curie, and he's saying, like, she's a wild animal.
She's a wild cat.
Because the other part's taken care of. She's Marie Curie, you know.
All the French radiologists knew that back then. She was wild, that Marie Curie.
But so I want to be told what to do. Yes, I wish for that kind of collaboration. But I don't go in expecting that it's going to happen. I want it.
Who is a director you worked with? Because I think you and I maybe share this from what you said, where we're not out to offend anyone, but you know, think of somebody who it was really just great, you loved working with. Other than your current collaboration, we're going to get to that, but
which I
one.
Did love, yes. My current collaboration. I have a few that I've really loved.
Martin Scorsese on Vanya?
Right. That Martin Scorsese directed, supposedly, according to Wikipedia, me and my husband
I'm
in
researching,
a 200-seat
in Wikipedia,
theater
it says
in New York.
She did Uncle Vanya
at CSC.
At CSC.
It's like a tiny black box theater in New York.
And it says Martin Scorsese directed the Checkout. And I go, my God, this is like the seismic thing that got by me. It's like someone walking up to you going, you know the Lindbergh baby was kidnapped, right?
It's totally
like, no, wild. I didn't know that.
And then in this Wikipedia entry that Alec just showed me, it then goes on to quote a terrible review of me in the play.
That's not a good section of that
no.
Wikipedia.
I gotta get
so Scorsese
that.
Did not direct
no,
Bond.
No, but yeah, Austin Pendleton did, and he is one of the most incredible directors I've ever worked with
tell
in my
why.
Life. Austin, it's funny. Austin asked me to do Uncle Vanya, and he, when they offered it to me, they sent me this interview with Austin, and it basically talks about this sort of incredible way that he likes to work with actors, you know, where everyone's free to respond to each other in the moment on stage, you know, all the fantasies that actors have of a way that you could actually really work together, which rarely happens. And I was like, Austin, I'd love to do this. I'd love to work this way, you know, where it's all just reacting to the reality of the moment with the other person on stage. And but how everybody says that's what they want to do. How are you actually going to do it? And he's like, well, you got to come and work with me to find out. And the truth is I don't know how he created this situation where everybody on stage had deep respect for each other, even though it was clear to me that there were actors who were stronger than others, that there were, but it made no difference. You know, I know one way he did it. I remember the first day of rehearsal, he said, however you imagined Sonia, whatever fantasy you had of who Sonia was going to be when you read this play, Sonia is her. Sonia's this person. And all the feelings you have about this person, about the way that ricochets off what you anticipated when you read the play, that's all useful. But Sonia is her. And so we did create this little black box theater situation where, and I did it with my husband, and he's a brilliant actor, so that was cool. And we got to pretend we were having an affair. Both Chekhovs we did, we were playing people who were having affairs, which was really hot and great, you know. but I loved working with Austin. I also loved, Hugo Blick, who directed The Honorable Woman.
You got a Golden Globe for that.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me, that was one of the longest times you were overseas and away from home.
Yeah, and
shooting.
And it's funny, I really admire what you said about how, for you, your trust as a director's to lose. I wish I could be like that, but I'm not. And I go in with my guard up. And secretly, I want the deepest, most intense artistic collaboration possible, but it's not easy for me. And with Hugo, I think we were both like that. And, you know, it was 8 hours of television. I'd only ever done a 2-hour movie before. I didn't know how to do that. And I'm in every minute of every scene, and it's super intense.
A lot of work with somebody to be
yeah,
coupled with somebody.
And it could have been terrible, you know? But I remember about 2/3 of the way through, somebody, I came over to him, and I just sort of said something in his ear about the scene. Oh, I think we need to shift this, and actually, can we move this here, and could this happen over here? Just almost shorthand at this point. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And someone sitting next to him said, do you just do whatever she says? And he said, he's English also, he said, I trust her completely, like that. And I took it in like, whoa, actually he was kidding, but I kind of think he does. And then at the very end, on the very, very last day, I had this voiceover to record, which plays at the beginning of every episode. And it's basically about trust. And it basically, I think it says something like, You have to just, I mean, not in these words, but it, what it meant was you either trust nobody or you just jump off the cliff and you trust. And I was like, he put me in this little room to record it because we'd forgotten to record it. And I was like, Hugo, do you mind if I say it to you? And so he came in the room with me, and I basically, the subtext, I guess, of what I was saying to him was, I trust you, you know?
Maggie Gyllenhaal. She said in an interview that she would probably be a different person by the end of her work on The Honorable Woman.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. Sarah Colangelo directed Maggie Gyllenhaal's new movie, The Kindergarten Teacher. Gyllenhaal told me she heard about the project at a holiday party.
Two people at the party said, have you heard about this script, The Kindergarten Teacher? It's coming to you. And I don't know about you, but for me, and it's great. And for me, I think it's really, really rare to read a great script. And also to have two people in one night out of nowhere just say, like, there's this great script and it's coming to you. I was like, okay. I was waiting every day after that for the script to come. And it took a while. And when it came, I read it. And I had that feeling. Like, you just, I've had it, like, three times, you know, where I was like, and also, if you have seen the movie, and I won't give anything away, the ending is pretty great. And I closed the last page of the script and I was like, I want this movie, you know? And it wasn't clear to me that it was offered to me, which actually just increased my appetite for it more, of course. They say now it always was, but I didn't know that. And one of the producers' mothers was having an operation in the hospital, and like nobody got back to me for a few days after I like really energetically raised my hand and was like, yes, please, what do I gotta do? And again, just waiting just made me want it more. And then they came back and they were like, oh, yes, we always meant to.
And it's based on another film.
Yeah, it's based on an Israeli movie, which I haven't seen.
Deliberately.
Yeah. I mean, I probably should see it now. I've heard wonderful things about it. And I've heard that narratively, it's very similar. And yet, it tells an almost entirely different story. So our movie, I think, is really about the consequences of what happens when you starve a vibrant woman's mind, told from the point of view of a group of women filmmakers. And our conclusion is that it's fucking dire, you know? That's. And I think the Israeli movie, which has a very similar narrative, is much more about masculinity in Israel and art in a country at war and very different things, even though the story itself is very similar. So I got the script and I signed up and then, you know, it was not easy to get our money. In fact, at Sundance, when we first premiered, I shook the hands of 50 executive producers who had, you know, all together somehow helped us cobble together the money to make it. So we spent a while doing that, and then we made it in 23 days in New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
Now, when you work with, this sounds like a silly thing, but I always think about this in terms of the brevity of schedules now and the pressure to shoot efficiently now, but with children, I find is very specific. And in the movie, in, for my money, the young boy, what's his name?
Jimmy in the movie's character, Parker.
Parker, mm-hmm. The boy who's we had the funniest moment yesterday because I said this kid's fantastic after the movie, and somebody from the festival said, well, he loves Boss Baby. He's like, how old is he? Like five.
He's six.
Six. Yeah. So we go backstage, and I'm like, this is amazing. You're doing like this really hypnotic, creepy drama, which is great. And I'm in Boss Baby. I mean, you and I, we have so much in common, you and I. You know, we're both in the business. Different wings of the business, maybe. Parker. But we had a lot of fun with him. But when you're working with somebody, like a lot of times, kids are performing, and the kids that climb the ladder a little bit in that division, they're very, you know, they're ready to come, you know, sing tomorrow on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And he's not.
No.
He's very real.
Yeah.
And was that a decision you and she talked about, you and Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I felt a couple of things very strongly. I have a child who's six and who was five when we made it, just like Parker's five. So it's hard to remember what it's like to be five. I mean, how different the world is, unless you're five. You have a five-year-old, I know, right?
Yeah.
Or unless you're living with a five-year-old. And then you're in that mind, kind of. So I felt two things. I felt I almost didn't do the movie at one point because I thought, no movie, no matter how much I love it or think it's important or whatever, is worth disturbing a child, even for a few minutes. So I was like, how are we going to do this? And I also don't think 5-6-year-olds are actors. I just don't believe that. And I don't think it's fair to ask them to be actors. So I felt like, so basically we worked in a couple ways. I learned this from Emma Thompson, actually, who I'm in love with, and who did Nanny McPhee. We did Nanny McPhee together, and we had tons of kids. And so often, especially with the very littlest one, we would just be like, stand on the X. Now look at that big black X on the wall and turn your head when I say so. When I clap, turn your head and say, I don't want to go. And we would clap, he'd turn his head, he'd say, I don't want to go. And I would say, no, sing it like me. I don't want to go. I don't want to go. No. And then he would just sort of repeat. I would be like, you have to just sing it. Like
Parker.
To Parker. Sing it. And so then he'd kind of just imitate my inflections. That was one way we worked with him, so that it was just a song. It wasn't like he actually, you can't say to a five-year-old, I want you to get in touch with the way in which you, I mean, like, but the other thing you can do with five-year-olds is that they will forget that the camera's on them, sort of. So we ran all the kindergarten stuff as if it were a kindergarten. I mean, you see them singing those songs with me or painting, or you're not gonna say, okay, we're gonna pretend to paint, or we're gonna like pretend to write X's on a piece of paper. We're just going to do it. And we choreographed the camera. I would sort of see where the camera was going, almost like a documentary. And then I would just like scoot over to wherever the camera was and begin the scene with whoever I needed to be talking to in that scene. And then the other funny thing about kids and the like short schedule is there were quite a few times where I did scenes with our first AD or our gaffer who would read off camera for me because the little boy had to go. And I'd be like, this is really weird. But Huh. You know, like the way you can trip yourself out as an actor, kind of, and you can be like, oh, there's helicopters going over all the time. We have to keep stopping in the middle. I'm really frustrated. And then all of a sudden, the frustration just goes back into the scene. So this one, I was like, oh, this is like a hairy 50-year-old guy with like a scrubby, you know, beard.
Easy now.
No. Our first AD. And he's lying on the ground, slating also. And I'd be like, oh, but I'm, okay, so I'm basically talking to this child as if he's a man. You know, you just figure out the way to throw it back in, because what else are you going to do?
Well, I'd love it if on my next film, you would come and do that ex-acting with me. Would you be there for me? You'd be my Mira Rostova, you know, like off the set going, turn to me. And say, I don't want to go to prison. I don't want to go to prison for tax evasion. You know, we could do that. You'd be my acting coach. That's amazing. That ex-acting thing. I need to work with you, man. I'm dying to get a script with you.
It was Emma Thompson, really.
Emma Thompson.
You can imagine.
The three of us,
she's pretty damn good at that, too.
Now, what about Sarah? I mean, how many films did she make before she made this film?
I loved working with Sarah.
Yeah.
And it was a totally different kind of experience than I had ever had before. And in some ways, I like to think it was a very feminine set, right? Sarah wrote and directed it. Our financiers were women. Our producers were women. It's all about a woman. But I'd worked with a lot of other women and had very different kinds
of
experience.
You've worked with a few women directors.
I have.
Right?
I've worked with many. I mean, even on The Deuce last season, 7 out of 8 directors were women, you know.
Is there a difference?
Well, there is a difference. Yeah, there is. But that's not necessarily what made, I think, my collaboration with Sarah and our set on The Kindergarten Teacher so, I don't know, unusual. Yeah, feminine, but I don't even totally know what that means. Even when I watch the movie, I'm like, this is feminine. Like, what does that mean and why? And my husband, after he saw it last night, he was like, I wish someone would send this to Senator Flake. But I don't really know totally why, right? It's not a political movie, but it's like somehow it's really kind of straight, purely feminine thing. It makes me think of The Piano, not this movie. I would never compare it to that, but the experience I had when I saw The Piano and I was like 16 or something and I had never seen anything like it. I was like, what? Like, I guess I think in some ways, girls, women my age, we get so used to having to relate to a male character, or even, let's just say, like a sort of masculine point of view on something. We're like, yeah, that's not exactly my experience, but I could twist it around and make it relatable to me. And that muscle is very exercised, I think, in most women. We're like, I know it's not exactly my way through the world, but I could just twist a little, and it's cool, I get it. Mm. And thank God, because otherwise we'd have very little to relate to. But then, like, when I saw The Piano, I was like, whoa, I feel so relaxed. I don't have to twist anything. And I felt that way when I read Sarah's script. I just, like, went straight in. And
When I saw this last night, what I love is that it's not a bad, I don't want to give it away, but the dynamic of the home is not all bad.
No.
But there's things that maybe, in my mind, you know, are missing. There's things you want that are gone.
Yeah.
And connections and feelings that are gone.
No, exactly. It's a much easier movie if her home life is like horrible.
Really, the husband.
If everything's just awful. Instead, she's
I'm not going to give away the scene on the phone.
Yeah.
And your husband's like, he's ready to, you know, do a little dance with you. And then the phone rings.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Really upsetting scene.
Yeah.
Like, so fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
There's
it's
a couple
true.
Of really fucked up scenes in this movie. It's incredible.
It's true.
One more thing before we take some questions. Do we have the mics poised for the questions? We do? Okay, one last question I have for you, which is, so you're doing The Deuce, you're on HBO. Mm. How did that happen? Meaning, how did they reel you in? I mean, I'm not just saying this for your benefit. You were one of the most admired movie actresses in the business. Everybody says this, everybody, you're gorgeous and you're talented and you're all these things. So when you go to do the TV thing, how did they hook you?
Well, huh. I just, it's so funny though, because like in the first three episodes, which was all I read of the Deuce, Candy didn't really have all that much to do. You know?
That's why you took the job.
No, but it's weird because I was just talking with Peter about this on, when we were walking on the beach here today. I was like, yeah, when I first, she turns so amazing. I mean, I love playing Candy. I really do. But I just had like a feeling. I don't know. It was David Simon and George Pelicanos. I mean, they've made some pretty damn good TV. And I had done The Honorable Woman with Hugo, who I told you I loved so much. So it wasn't my first time in TV. I wasn't like snobby about TV. I wanted it. You know, I wanted a good job, you know, that I could count on. But also...
Stay home.
Yes, and nice to be thing. Home. But also, I was like, I don't know. I just had a good feeling. I was like, I just want to play this woman. I want to try it. I want to see if I can do this. It was so far outside of my experience to play a sex worker in 1971. I just liked her. I just had like this feeling about it.
You signed for three seasons.
Three seasons.
Not a long contract.
No,
that's cool.
And I guess you know, there was this whole thing where I was like, guys, I've only read three. There's going to be 24. How do I know? I mean, I think you guys are all right, but what if this becomes something? I mean, I never had signed on
trust.
To something like that before. Well, that's true.
The T word.
But again, like I said, I don't trust that well. So I asked them if I could be a producer. And the thing is when, and everyone said to me, you are never going to get that. On a big HBO show, you've never produced television before, you didn't develop it, like, good luck, Maggie. But then they were like, okay,
great.
Let's be partners.
Good for you.
And I was like, oh, wow.
Good for you, you know? Good for you. Do we have, who do we have, over here? Yes, sir.
How did you prepare for your role as a teacher? Did you interview teachers? Did you shadow teachers?
I felt in this movie where this woman ends up doing a lot of really problematic things, the movie only really works if you are on her side for a really, really long time. You're on her side even when she's crossing lines. You would never imagine you would be on anyone's side while they were crossing. And so, you know, it was important to me that she be a great teacher. Like a really extraordinary teacher. So my daughter was, I had one older daughter, that I had a daughter who was in preschool, and I asked her preschool teacher, do you know like a great kindergarten teacher who's not at this school? Because I didn't really want to mix it with my kid's school. And she recommended this woman on the Upper West Side, and I went up there all the time, sat in her classroom. I got so much from her. She had dinner with Sarah and I once and gave us like some more tips. But I shadowed her. I sat there for hours. I learned a ton from her. She was great.
Somebody up there in the back?
We saw your film last night, and your performance was stunning, and I did want to thank you for that. I'm wondering... you pick such unconventional roles. I can't help but wonder if the role that you felt you executed the best, was it the same role that your critics thought you executed the best? You know, from Inside Out, do those two things match up for you?
Do you and your critics think the same?
Well, one thing I think is interesting, you say that they're unconventional roles, but I just, when you said that word, I thought... Actually, the thing I like love about the few roles that I've done that I feel the most proud of, that I think I executed the best, as you put it, I think are actually sort of the most human people. So maybe the most conventional in terms of being like we actually are. And I know the woman in the movie does... things that many of us would never ever do, but in so many other ways, she's like, I relate to her so much. You know, she totally could be a friend of mine. And even the ways she's confused, or the fact that she's confused, I understand, I have compassion for. I don't know, in terms of, I don't know about whether, I guess I would say this. Recently, I would say since The Honorable Woman, I think, I've had this feeling where I'm most proud of the last thing I've done, which I feel really grateful for. Like, I feel like, okay, I'm making the choices that are right for me right now, because I feel like I keep, I don't know, learning about what I'm doing as time goes on. I'm sure I'll take a dip and take a wrong route for a while. But at the moment, it's been like, I feel, yeah, the most proud of the most recent work.
I had an actor once say to me, who was this very funny guy, older guy when he was very young, he said, remember one thing about reviews. He said, when they say you're bad, you're never as bad as they say you are. I mean, if it's not great, you're never as bad. And when they say you're really good or you're great, you're always even better than they said you were. They're even better than that. They never get it right. They don't know how.
I know. That's so funny that, like, I got to, like, take that little piece of that Wikipedia thing and, like, put it up somewhere. It was just so mean.
With the Daily News.
The Daily News, yeah. They hated my Elena.
Right there, yes, sir, who's straining out of your chair. The restroom is down to the right, sir.
How do you define feminine and masculine?
No, see, I can't. That's what I'm saying. I don't want to be reductive about it, and I can't define feminine and masculine. I'm just trying to say there's, like, something, and it doesn't... Okay. Oh, I mean, I don't want to get, like, super... There's just things that are on my mind right now. Like, what does it mean to make a feminine movie? I don't know the answer to that. I just know that if you're living in a masculine world, fundamentally, which I'd say it's pretty clear we are, even a misogynistic world, right? It doesn't, just because you're a woman who directs a movie or just because you're a woman who writes a movie doesn't mean it's feminine, right? You have to twist yourself and fit yourself all your life. And if, like Virginia Woolf in Room of One's Own has this whole thing about how, like, even Charlotte Bronte, she said she's not really making purely feminine work because she's, like, hiding her paper under her sewing or whatever. And so that's what I mean when I say... I saw the piano, and it had some like effect on me when I was 16. There, I did this interview with Trevor Noah. You know, it was about The Deuce. Actually, it wasn't about the kindergarten teacher, but he'd seen the preview for the kindergarten teacher, and he was like, "I saw the preview." He said, "Is it a thriller, or is it like an intimate movie about a woman's mind, or is it like a horror movie?" And I loved that, and I keep coming back to it because I think it's not any of those. It's new, and I think it might be new because it's feminine. It doesn't tick the boxes we're used to. But again, I don't know. I'm a little confused about this.
We have just time for a couple more quick ones. The lady right there on the end, we'll do two more quick ones.
I have a very quick question. If you weren't an actor, what would you do? Or what would you want to do?
Oh, man. I'm not good at very many other things. I mean, I'm like an okay cook. I have a friend who's a professor, which I'd love to think, like, maybe I could, like, be an English teacher or something, but I wouldn't be any good at it. I mean, are you good at other things?
So good. Whatever I'm good at, I'm so much better at it than you've been led to believe. I'm so good. And I'm not really that bad at any of it either. It's just that. But you never any thoughts about...
Maybe professional ice skating?
Wow. Yes.
Okay, considering what you've said about literature and being an English major, and you're probably a great reader, if you could option a book and do your movie, but not be in it, what would you do?
Well, I did actually just option a book, and I'm not going to be in it. I'm adapting it, and I'm going to direct it. And it's called The Lost Daughter by Elena Ferrante.
All right, so my last question is a two-parter, because we're going to be out of time. My last question is a quick two-parter. Now, I had a very fleeting role in Looming Tower with your husband. Got to work with your husband for the first time, Peter Sarsgaard. And my first question, which is a silly question, is your husband really as sweet as he seems?
Yeah,
my husband. He's one of the loveliest men I've ever met in my life.
He's a damn good husband.
He's a sweet guy.
I'm thrilled with him.
And what's that like for you, being two people who are working all the time, very successful movie actors, Is it wonderful to be with somebody who understands what you're going through? I'm married to a woman that's not in the business, and sometimes it's
like sometimes I'll be like, when are you coming home? I don't understand. When are you coming home? Like, we had planned such and such, and he's like, Maggie, you know I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah. My wife was like, my wife sometimes is like, Alec, why are you so dramatic? And I'm like, duh. Anyway, Maggie Gyllenhaal, everybody. And now an update. After a newspaper story appeared about this conversation, Gyllenhaal's Wikipedia page has been revised. Maggie Gyllenhaal's new movie, The Kindergarten Teacher, comes out on Netflix October 12th. This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing.
This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.